Good morning, folks. Hope you're having a great Tuesday morning. Weather's a little iffy out there, so be careful as you travel the streets of our metropolitan area. Just slow down a little bit. It looks like the rain may be picking up later this afternoon, so be aware of that as well. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We're going to visit with Jeff Nowak at 12:30, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. We'll be talking about the Saints' most recent win over the Falcons, Coach Darren Rizzi. First win as the interim head coach, and more importantly, ending a seven-game losing streak. At the top of the hour, at the noon hour, David Beyer, Director of Immigration Studies at the Heritage, will talk about Trump appointing former ICE Director Tom Homan as the next border czar. And we'll talk about the implication of same. Ed Shervinak, professor of political science at UNO, joins us. It looks like the mayor's race is starting to take shape, and we'll talk about the announcement of Helena Moreno first off the starting block, announcing that her intentions to run for mayor. Our NOLA Coalition segment will visit with Dr. Ji Yun Ko, executive director of Coats for Kids. We'll talk about that program and what they hope to accomplish this year. And in the 10 o'clock hour, I've just got a few things that I want to talk about. It's interesting what's going on around the country today. Still, we're doing the postmortem on this presidential race, why things went this way, why things went that way. We're still waiting to see who actually controls the House. This is a joke, right? 1 week after the election, and we still don't have votes counted. I just can't understand how this works in this country and why we would allow it to work this way. It's kind of crazy when you think about it. Looks like the House is leaning Republican. What we know so far is that President Trump ended up with over 300 electoral votes, right? The vast majority of states he carried. He carried the popular vote. Senate is now in control of Republicans and still waiting on outcome of the House, although some have said that the Republicans have won the House. It's just a matter of time. They're just waiting on these final calls to come in. There was a great letter to the editor in the Wall Street Journal about the process that this individual went through and in talking with their friends and how they decided to cast a vote in the presidential election the way that they did. And I thought it would be worthwhile reading the letter because it's really kind of enlightening. Ann Bauer is the name of the person that wrote the letter, and she says the following. Almost no one I know voted for either of the presidential tickets. We, my friends and family, and I all voted against Donald Trump and J.D. Vance or against Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. And we made concessions to do it. At a dinner party last weekend, I was lamenting this necessity. I'd love to see an election where voters are excited about the person they're voting for, I said. When was the last time we had one of those? Actually, a friend said, I think this is optimal. An election where you vote against rather than for is more logical, less emotional, and it yields better results. My friend is in his early 60s, a crusty closet conservative. I've known him for 30 years, but had no idea about his politics until 2020 when the Twin Cities became ground zero for progressive activism and I started questioning my lifelong faith in Democrats. That's when my friend, a theater instructor and ethicist, came out to me. We agreed about the illiberal trends we were seeing, especially in public schools. Extended COVID closures, even as much as of the rest of the country was reopening, teacher strikes blocking roads, soaring rates of transgenderism in urban teens, glaring educational inequities between white and black areas despite the teaching of critical race theory as early as the third grade. My people were so bathed in righteousness, they'd become a living satire. For 3 months, I sat on a Minnesota water conservation board with wealthy travelers who kept golf courses green while recommending water rationing for farmers. The group's leader proposed we stage a Pearl Harbor-level event that would scare the public into taking shorter showers. Any objection to such ideas is met with gentle murmuring about xenophobia or fascism. Yard sign speech is rhetorical kryptonite, especially in an all-blue place. That's what Americans like me voted against. We didn't vote for Trump. We voted to stop the cancerous mutation of well-intended ideas misused by institutions turned self-serving and dictatorial by an elite few. This is the story of so many catastrophes. From Lysenkoism and the internment of Japanese Americans to weapons of mass destruction and the Patriot Act, we've been watching parallel manias unfold on a myriad of fronts. Loving acceptance of trans people was transformed into speech control and a consumer pool for big pharma's hormone treatments. Empowerment of educators became disregard for the well-being of kids. Opposition to racism morphed into elaborate and profitable shaming rituals. Privileged, lucky people filched the causes of the impoverished, becoming irate and striking back when the downtrodden dared speak for themselves. Speech has been under attack universally. Many people I know voted against Trump in part because he has threatened to shut down unfriendly media. This is a position I respect, but from my vantage point, shared by many of my fellow anti-Harris voters, it is Democrats who have gone too far, breaching our First Amendment rights again and again, using canny convolutions like misinformation and conspiracy to justify suppressing ideas they just simply don't like. We voted to check the momentum of these movements, to halt a progressive disease. We voted against the idea that going further is always better. In our hearts, many of us were striking back against the hectoring superiority, the people who told us we were too stupid to understand, or too racist, too sexist, too self-hating, too similar to Nazis. We voted to make those fiercely divisive and destructive arguments stop. I realized my friend had a point about the drawbacks of voting for a candidate. The last time I did so was in 2012. Barack Obama was smooth and kind and wicked smart. He wept over slain children authentically, I believe, spoke with every man authority, and had great taste in music and books. I felt a deep emotional tie to this man who represented hope and change. How lovely, how feel good, how vague, yet I, along with my community, felt held and seen and celebrated when he prevailed. Years later, the revelations about Mr. Obama started to emerge, like old infidelities. Each one has a slap. The raising of protected parkland in Chicago so his presidential library would have a better view. Invented histories that casually elide his cronyism and transactional social climbing. His lavish, star-infested 200-guest birthday party during COVID shutdowns. More recently, his astonishing condescension stumping for Ms. Harris when he scolded black men for their assumed sexism and told them how to vote. Voting for a candidate back then led me to soft criteria. Charm. Warmth. A quick smile. Ultimately, I felt disappointed and betrayed. The pitfalls of an emotional relationship. None of this is at play with Mr. Trump. I'm not looking for him to be charming or warm. I don't care for YMCA. I often dislike the things he says. His behavior on January 6, 2021 was egregious, pure hubris, and it might have been disqualifying if not for the confounding response from Democrats who seized on the event and used it to justify constitutional infringements from the day forward. In a recent echo of this effect, I cringed and nearly caved in the day a comedian told an inexcusably offensive joke at Mr. Trump's Madison Square Garden rally. But my will to vote against the Democratic regime was resurrected when President Biden sneered that more than half of the country's citizens were garbage for supporting Trump. I fear the sway of Big Pharma, the mad scientific modification of children, inflationary monetary policy, and Cheney-esque forever wars. More than anything, I cherish freedom of expression and believe it is our most spiritual right. Prayer, poetry, stories, music, they're what lift us above this mortal space. Ideas have metaphysical weight. I'd rather die than live in a world without this freedom, which I saw Democrats repeatedly trying to control and restrict. My best wager in 2024 is that Messrs. Trump and Vance will put the brakes on these dangerous runaway trends. I spoke to my friend Wednesday morning to get his permission to write about our conversation. Then I asked if he was happy about the election outcome. He responded, "Not exactly happy," he replied, "but it was much better than the alternative." I thought that that piece kind of summed it up and embraced what I've heard from a lot of folks that I talk to as well. They were not totally and positively enamored with Donald Trump as a candidate, but what outweighed some of their feelings about Donald Trump, some of their hesitation about Donald Trump, some of their uncertainty about Donald Trump, was the certainty of their feelings about what Democrats were doing to our society and where they would step in the way of a lot of what the country was feeling. The day after the election, you were recalled during a monologue that I delivered that that's exactly what I said. It couldn't be. They went right to the isms, sexism and everything else, racism. It couldn't be those issues that she so articulately pointed out in that letter to the editor, the opinion piece. And as she said, it ended up that we didn't vote for a candidate. We voted against movements that were going in a direction in an out-of-control way that had the net effect of restricting our rights and freedoms that we have been accustomed to enjoying. I don't know about you. I'd love to hear from you, 504-260-1870, on that very topic, as she so eloquently laid out in that letter about where we were headed. And I said the other day that one of the things that really struck me is that I would never allow a third party to step in between me as a parent and my child. And how dare anyone tell me that I am not working in the best interest of my children and that others know better. When interestingly, they know nothing about the home life. They know nothing about that individual's home life. They know nothing about the ideology of the parents or otherwise. They're hearing one side of a story from an adolescent. And they're off and running. And they believe, based on that, that they know better, that their ideology is stronger than everyone else and more important than any other person's belief. And their attempt to shut people down when they try to provide an alternative, we saw it at school board meeting after school board meeting, school board meeting. Yet no one in the mainstream media ever referred to that as suppression of a First Amendment right, a free speech. To the contrary, they were policing speech. And then they wondered why so many of those very same school board members were voted out of office. It's amazing that folks didn't see this coming. All you had to do was look at the polls. And on almost every one of these issues, the vast majority of the public fell on the side contrary to what the Democratic Party was promoting. And we're seeing it now, right? Already, they're trashing the appointment of Tom Homan as the border czar, and we'll talk to David Beyer later about this very topic. As though those that were in favor of an immigration policy that was going to be more stricter and just basically following the law, that Trump was going to be warm and fuzzy and provide something different. I don't know how you could think that. The public has spoken where they are on that. They thought that the Hispanic population was monolithic. Most of the Hispanics that I know, including my mother and others, who's a first-generation immigrant from Central America, they are pro-Trump on immigration and what he says because they understand the process, the sacrifice, and everything else that they had to go through to get to this country. But we view that population as though they would be more sympathetic and empathetic. No, they left countries that had no rule of law. Countries that had no rule of law. They understand better than most the importance of having that rule of law, especially when it comes to immigration. Because they went through that process. And the day that they were naturalized, that was one of the most proud days of their life. And the fact of the matter that we're making all of these accommodations, monetarily and otherwise, and the folks that I'm talking to, they are pissed. They think it's a joke. And they wonder where this country's headed when you have a good percentage of folks, over 40 million in this country, who are citizens that are living below the federally identified poverty level, and they are not the beneficiary of some of the accommodations given to this group. And we wonder why we find ourselves in the position we find ourselves in. And we're going to talk about this a little later as well, about this child separation policy. I said this from the very beginning. How is it that we segregate a population within this country and we find that when the adult is separated from the child, that it is completely and totally unacceptable, egregious, and otherwise? You might say, where's Newell going with this? I served in law enforcement 40 years. We separated parents from children every day when we arrested them, whether that be for a misdemeanor, a relative felony, a felony, or otherwise in this country, they were separated from their family and their children. And in many cases, they were separated immediately at the scene of the crime. And they were taken somewhere different. But all of a sudden, the law enforcement actors at the border are viewed upon differently, inhumane. Really? Have we looked ourselves in the mirror? We do this every day in this country. Every single solitary day to citizens. And yet there should be a special privilege? They violated the law. Just like when citizens violate the law. Right? And what happens? Accommodations have to be made by family members or otherwise. They put themselves at the risk of that happening by coming across the border. They put themselves in that predicament every day, the same way that a criminal puts themselves in a predicament when they knowingly and intentionally violate the law. How is it different? How is it more inhumane for that to actually happen? And the fact of the matter is, it's been happening in this country for 3 or 4 decades. right? Whether we talk about it or not, it's been a byproduct of an immigration policy here in this country. Because why? Well, for the most part, because we do it to our own citizens. But nobody wants to have that honest conversation and talk about the thing that's staring us right in the face. And we truly expect that somebody's got a magic wand that's going to make all of this go away. No, it's not. It's not how it works. It's not how it works operationally out there in the field. It never has, and it never will. So I'm not sure, and they're talking about how, you know, under the previous Trump administration, there were thousands of children lost. It's the same thing that's going on under the Biden administration. And I don't mean this as a criticism. It's a fact. It's an observation. It's the frailty of how enforcement of law actually has outcomes that are ugly when everything is done by a constitutional standard and by the operation of law. These things happen. Love to hear from you. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. Love to hear from you. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. A lot of folks texting in saying, oh, you're defending Trump. No, I'm talking about voters. And I'm talking about Democrats that can't seem to understand why certain folks ended up voting the way that they did. You've had the New York governor, Kathy Hochul, call people un-American for making that choice. This is not in defense of Trump. Listen closely to what I've said. Yesterday, I called out Donald Trump Jr. for comments that he made by embracing that think tank Sarah Palin relative to President Zelensky in Ukraine. Today, I'll call out Donald Trump for asking the Senate to bypass its rules in the confirmation process. It's an idiotic request. It should not have been made. You have to go through the same process that every president's got to go through, whether you like it or not. As distasteful as it may be, you have to go through that process. And if the Senate gives in to Donald Trump in this regard, they are a band of fools to do so. Plain and simple. The request shouldn't have been made. You're playing right into all of your detractors' hands by doing so. I know it's frustrating. It is. It's a frustrating process. I get it. But it's a necessary process. And it does have value, quite frankly. And the Republicans should know better than anyone, because they were able to tank some so far left-leaning individuals that were basically socialist from being in leadership positions in the Biden administration. What goes around comes around. Now you got to swallow the medicine too, plain and simple. Let's go to Chuck. Chuck, you're up. What say you?
Hey, Noel. Couple things. First of all, I agree. I believe it's always all about the money and follow the money. And, couple things. If you read a book, it was on the New York Times bestseller list, I don't know, about 2018, called House of Trump, House of Putin. A renowned Harvard scholar and writer put it together, and it basically discusses Donald Trump's association with Putin and the Russian mafia. When a lot of his businesses were failing, and the USSR was coming down, they took advantage to funnel money and launder money through Trump's failing businesses. So he's been in Putin's back pocket for a long time. The other thing is, one of the biggest single donor to Trump's campaign this year, and I'm not a Trump or a Biden or Harris fan, I'm just following the money. And believe me, Harris had a lot of questionable money calls too. But a reclusive billionaire named Timothy Mellon Financial, Bank of New York, grandfather, Andrew Mellon, started U.S. Steel, Gulf Oil, Alcoa Aluminum. What he was famous for, and he was a bit of a racist, but I'm not even worried about racism. It's all about the money. What he was famous for was creating havoc in the stock market so that the prices would decline. And then with all of his cash reserves, he would swoop in and buy these companies very cheap. I think that's why Elon Musk is on board with Trump right now, because I think we're getting ready to see, and it's scary. It really is going to scare me here. I think we're getting ready to see a massive meltdown in the stock market that I think is going to be induced by something. I'm not really sure whether it's going to be a global war, whatever it might be. But I think what's going to happen is we're ready for another wealthy repositioning of money. The billionaires are going to get even richer, because people that can't afford to hold their positions are going to sell their stock, the common man, lose their 401ks like what happened back in 2008, 1987, and, of course, as far back as 1933 and 32 and 29. And there's going to be a gigantic repositioning of wealth again. And you know, Mellon, who's worth about, I don't know, $30 billion right now, he'll be worth three times that when this is all done. And, again, the common man that can't afford to live barely from paycheck to paycheck is going to suffer. So that's what scares me. I don't care about transgender. I don't care about immigration. Oh, yeah, these things are important. But the bottom line is, for us all to survive, you have to have money to live. And there's getting ready to be another generational shift in wealth, and it's going to happen through the stock market, and it's happening with all these people that are positioning themselves right now, and Putin's going to do it too. Putin's involved in it too. But
Chuck, you do realize that this is done in every administration. Go take the top 20 donors to Joe Biden and go look at their financial history, and you're going to find a lot of the same activity relative to market manipulation. It's how a lot of folks of the top billionaires in the world have accumulated their wealth. I mean, this is not cornered by Republicans or Donald Trump. I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is the willingness of Wall Street to allow that to happen. They all know what's going on. They've always known what's going on, right? That's the sad reality. you have a lot of people that are motivated by greed. You know, I mean, that's...
What do you mean a lot of people? Come on, Newell. Everybody's motivated by greed.
Motivated by greed. I think a lot of people are motivated by what's in their self-interest. Now, I'm not one that goes out to intentionally hurt somebody for my benefit. That's not in my DNA. I don't sucker punch anybody. You know, and I think greed kind of works the same way. I compete in an open marketplace like everyone else, but that doesn't necessarily equate to greed. So, you know, and a lot of people feel like 4 years ago they were in a better position than they are today. Who am I to argue that point? That sometimes perception is reality. It may not even be true by looking at the numbers. But their feeling and what they see at the grocery store each and every day is a little different in different areas of the country, and they react to it a little differently as well. That's their choice. We'll be right back. We'd love to hear from you. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We'll be right back. So, you know, a lot of folks have their own connotation as to what this mass deportation word actually means. I would just remind folks that it's always limited by the infrastructure, the constitutional protections, the number of immigration judges, the length of the process of getting through that court system in order to have a deportation order issued by that third party directing immigration to deport an individual. a lot of folks just really believe that we're going to have all kinds of law enforcement people running all over the place, picking people up and deporting them. In the last 20 to 25 years, the president that deported more illegals than anyone else was Barack Obama in the first 4 years of his administration. In fact, we in Jefferson Parish per capita deported more illegals than any other county in the country. We were very proactive in working with immigration in a lot of the task forces that were set up, multi-jurisdictional task forces. I believed it was my constitutional obligation to do so, because when I took the oath, it was to uphold the laws of the United States, the laws of the state of Louisiana, and the laws of the parish of Jefferson. And they're not mutually exclusive. There are a lot of activist groups that came down and said that you should not be doing this. I said, well, then why am I compelled to take this oath of office? Please, someone show me the asterisk where there's an exception to the rule. So when the feds asked me for help, I gave them help. When I asked them for help, they gave me help. That's how it works. You want that level of cooperation. You got people already out there saying, we're not helping. We're not going to help in any way, shape, or form. And then they're going to be the same folks that are going to cry when maybe the federal government, when they reach out to help from the federal government, they say, I'm sorry, you know, we're not into that today. That's not what we're into. That doesn't work. Doesn't work for us, doesn't align with our ideology, our politics at this juncture where we find ourselves. So no, we can't imagine ourselves reaching out and helping you in that respect. I used to oftentimes ask people, is that what you really want? It's like these constitutional sheriffs that were running around out there that were talking about, you know, they were going to stand in the way of this law being enforced or that law being enforced. You don't have that right. Nobody in this country would want to give that right to one individual to do so. And whether there's ever an attempt by this president or the incoming president or any other person, we're going to call them out on the show, because that's not how this works at all. So I get a lot of folks saying, well, give us some examples of how, you know, that free speech was suppressed and everything else. Well, the Biden administration met with the social media companies as it related to COVID. They suppressed the expression of opinion, many of, interestingly, were validated in the waning days of the pandemic, that many folks, a lot of folks, leaders in their educational field, attempting to render opinions about certain things that the federal government was doing, that it wasn't going to work, and if you follow the science, it would show something contrary to what the Biden administration was telling you. Meanwhile, in the background, the Biden administration was meeting with social media companies, suppressing that, changing the algorithms, encouraging the change of the algorithm so that those folks' opinions went nowhere. Some people were just flat out banned. So let's just start there. We can go to the Hunter Biden laptop computer where they, what a boondoggle that was. They got 50-some-odd intelligence officials to go out there and basically lie. They knew better. They had the information. They knew it. They didn't care, because the win was more important than the public's confidence in the institutions. They were willing to sacrifice that for the win. You want to talk about threats to democracy? How about engaging in exotic executive orders and executive action to circumvent the U.S. Supreme Court? What happened to the balance of power? You want to talk about a threat to democracy? And the list goes on and on and on. And neither party, this is not unique to one party or the other. Unfortunately, they're all in this pot together. So no one has threats to democracy cornered. And we stand by and allow them to do that. That's why, as it relates to immigration, I've consistently said, let's just enforce the laws that are on the books today. That's the way it went. They haven't been changed. So we are compelled when we take that oath of office to do so. It can't be any easier. And if we don't like the law, we don't just get to avoid it. You have to have it changed by the legislative branch of government. I think that still holds true. I think that's what I learned in civics class. I think that's still the case. I may be wrong. We'll be right back. So I'll play Mitt Romney and ask you for a citation regarding your statement that Jefferson Parish arrested the most illegal immigrants. That's not what I said. I said per capita and got them deported. You can Google it. It'll come up.